Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the IDFC First Bank Q4 FY22 earnings conference call hosted by ICICI Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Kunal Shah from ICICI Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, and good evening, everyone. This is Kunal Shah from ICICI Securities. Today we have with us Mr. V. Vaidyanathan, Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Sudhanshu Jain, CFO and Head Corporate Center, Mr. Saptarshi Bapari, Head Investor Relations from IDFC First Bank to discuss their Q4 and the full year FY22 earnings. Over to you, sir.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us for this call this evening. I've got with me Sudhanshu Jain, who's the Chief Financial Officer of the company.
Yeah. Good evening, everyone.
I've got Saptarshi, who heads the investor relations and many strategic affairs for the company.
Hi. Good evening, everyone.
It's nice to speak to all of you. I'd like to give a few opening remarks, and then Sudhanshu is ready with his comments to with his numbers to share with you. Number one, we'd like to say that, you know, for the last 3 years or so, you heard us say that we are consolidating the balance sheet and strengthening it. The reason was that we had a very large loan book of over 1 lakh crores at the time of merger, but we had only retail deposits of 10,400 crores, so that was clearly unsustainable. We slowed down the overall loan book for the first 3 years, and our loan book grew by a CAGR of only 6% from FY19 to FY22. But the deposits, the retail deposits grew at a CAGR of 72% in the last 3 years. That clearly shows that we were very focused on first addressing deposit side. I'm happy to share with all of you that that phase of let me say, consolidating the balance sheet or strengthening the balance sheet, whichever way we put it, that phase is now behind us. We are quite strong. We think that from now on, we will be able to grow the loan book comfortably. That's the point number one. Number two, you see that, if you were to get a sense of where the loan book will grow from here on for the next few years, we think that, to grow the loan book from now on, overall loan book, retail, wholesale, all put together, to grow that at between 20%-25%, it should be very possible. We will break out of our CAGR growth of 6% and get into the normal growth league, which all, let me say, good quality private sector banks are growing or probably a bit faster than that. Number three, for the growth, we also think that we have a very, very strong lending model. Our incremental lending model by our internal assessments is giving us a return on equity of 20%, and that's very strong. You might ask how. If you notice, even in Capital First, we were posting 15% return on equity on the book itself. Forget the incremental return on equity, which was much higher, maybe 18% or 20%. That itself was 15% on a cost of funds of 9%. Now, on cost of funds of 5%, it's certainly you can see how 15% can easily jump to 20%. You can see that that's coming. In any case, this is despite the fact that we started the prime home loans, all that is factored into the ROE of 20% that I'm talking about. On that kind of a business model, the book is beginning to grow, and that is why you will begin to see the profit jaw begin to open from here on quite strongly. My fourth comment or third comment is that the all legacy accounts of the bank, which we have often talked about whenever we had. Now all of those issues are all addressed. Either they are straightaway in NPA, like some of the toll accounts we talk about and the power accounts we talk about, or they are current. There's very little SMA 0, 1, and 2 that is left in the wholesale book now. Whatever is there, we have provided for it. Please don't have much concern on that front. My number fifth comment is that the incremental quality of wholesale lending for the last 3 years has been pretty good, because earlier it was infrastructure, and all of us know it is not that someone did a good job or bad job, it's just the nature of the beast was like that. But incrementally, we haven't done much of infra. We've actually focused on regular corporate lending, which is regular cash flow based, good quality name based, balance sheet based and all that. And that book, we have sanctioned close to rupees 17,500 crores of wholesale loans in the last 3 years. And I'm really happy to share with you that the net NPA, even after 3 years, and it has gone through the stress of COVID, the NPA is zero. So on that book, so you should be comfortable now that there is no real issue coming up on this front. The fifth point is that you might say, listen, if you're going to grow the loan book by 20 to 25%, that's on a loan book of 1,22,000 crores, which means our loan book should grow by anywhere about 20 to 30,000 crores a year. You might say, look, where are you going to get 30,000 crores of deposits for doing that? I must say that you know, in the last 3 years alone, we have grown retail deposits by rupees 54,820 crores. Now, that's retail deposits, retail CASA, retail term deposits. That really shows that, and by the way, last 3 years we've had every problem, I think, around, we were a relatively startup bank, we had COVID, we had, you know, lots of issues and all that. But basically, despite that, you know, if money could come to us, we can clearly see that we will be in a position to fund ourselves for that sort of a deposit growth. We feel, frankly, very comfortable on that front. You know, to put it in context, our CASA, for example, is now touching, nudging 50%, and it's been around that number for now 4 quarters in a row. And we feel quite confident that even next year, we will be able to sustain our CASA at 50%, give or take a few basis points here or there. Now, therefore, to be able to have a strong deposit franchise with CASA of 50%, ability to grow, is a tremendous source of comfort for all of us, and also gives us a lot of confidence that we can now, you know, so to say, press the pedal on the lending side. The next thing to remember is what's happening on the, you know, you might say that, look, you might grow the loans by 20,000 to 25,000 crores, so what's the quality? Now, our asset quality, I'm happy to say that the gross and net NPA for the bank, for the retail side, and if we specifically call out retail because that's the large part of the book, as you can know, and when we say retail, we mean both retail, the personal credit, which is the retail, and then the commercial financing, which is basically business loans, business banking, commercial vehicles, those kind of stuff, which goes largely to businesses. These are the two categories we track. Now, on the retail side, the categories which are defined, the gross NPA has now come down to 2.63%, and the net NPA has come down to 1.15%, that graph. Has come down to 1.15%. Now, we have always guided that the gross NPA and the net NPA of the retail side will come down to 2% and 1% respectively, gross to 2 and net to 1%. We feel quite confident on that front. And for that, you should see the trend to give you the comfort. In March 21, when the COVID hit, let me go back a little more in time. Pre-COVID, let me say December 2019, the gross NPA of retail was 2.26%. In March 21, which is when the peak of the COVID was there, the gross NPA came down to it went up to 4.01%. In June, it came to 3.86. In September, it came to 3.45. In December, it came to 2.92. And in March, it has come down to 2.63. So it's not hard to see why this number should come down to 2 as per our guidance. Now, let me talk of net NPA. In December 19, pre-COVID, our bank's retail side's net NPA was 1.06%. In peak of COVID, it went to 1.9, which is in March 21. June, it came to 1.82. September, it came to 1.66. December, it came down to 1.28. And March 22, it has now come down to 1.15. So, like, you know, 1.15 is in touching distance of 1. So, hopefully, there should be no concern. In fact, our own internal estimates are it will go down below 1 rather comfortably. So, you get the drift about how we think of the asset quality side. Now, the next point to address, you know, after addressing deposits, after addressing growth, after talking of asset quality, is our confidence on the capital front. Because after all, if you want to grow the book at 20%, we need to have capital by our side. So on this front, our bank is strongly capitalized. We've got 16.8% is our capital. And, you know, we also have significant headroom for Tier 2 because we haven't raised that much of that. So we can always raise some Tier 2, and we have sufficient headroom to go. Now, next thing is about incremental unit economics. And on this front, I already described to you that our retail lending business is giving us 20% return on equity, and all we have to do is just keep doing that in a safe way, in a quality, keeping a good eye on quality. On quality front, if you permit me, I still have to, it will give you confidence to note, it's a 10-year track record. Now, 10-year, it's not a quarter or two quarter, 10 years is straight 40 quarters. And for us to continuously, for a long time, keep a gross NPA of 2 and net NPA of 1, must give you confidence that we will get there. And if we can do a good return on equity with low gross and low net NPA and a reasonable credit loss, we should be just fine and be able to grow it from here. The next point to note is credit loss percentage. Now, I must read out some numbers to you if that helps you. Now, as far as credit cost is concerned, if you remember when the COVID second wave hit us, then when we came out with the June 2021 results, we took a big block of provisions for COVID second wave. At that time, and it was a pretty large hit, we took a 1,872 crore provision. Not all of it was retail. It had some lot of wholesale infrastructure account, etc. But still, it had retail. Retail was a component of that. Now, at that time, we had given a clear guidance of what we expect Q2, Q3, Q4 of FY22 to look like. At that time, if you recall, I had publicly said to all of you that our Q2 provisions will be less than Q1, Q3 will be less than Q2, and Q4 will be less than Q3. I'm happy to share the following numbers with you as it turned out. So across our Q2 provisions was 475 crores, Q3 provisions were 392 crores, and Q4 provisions are only 369 crores. And the sum total of all these four numbers is 3,100 crores. Now, our average loan book for the year was 118,700 crores. So if you divide, you'll get a number of 2.5%-2.6%. Now, you can think and calculate for yourself that in a COVID-ravaged year where Q1 was so hard hit, and by the way, in Q1, there were lockdowns across the country. I can't say across the country, but across a large number of states, it's practically a national lockdown, but there was no moratorium. So slippages were there. So despite such a quarter and a year, our credit loss for the whole year was only 2.5%-2.6%. You can do the math. It's somewhere there between the two. I think it's 2.6. So therefore, if a COVID-ravaged year, it was 2.6, really, it's not hard for you to also believe us that next year, when we're guiding this for 1.5, we have done our math for that. So if we take annualized credit loss, then for Q4, our annualized credit loss is only 1.2%. Now, so that's 1.2. We are guiding for 1.5. So we kept ourselves sufficient cushion when we say that next year will be 1.5. And therefore, there is enough data by our side that when we were running this, so earlier it was 2.5, now even the COVID year is 2.5, now we're guiding for 1.5. So you get the drift. And therefore, we believe that we are building pretty much a phenomenal model at our end where we are able to lend to multiple segments of the market, also the prime home loans, but also to a two-wheeler customer, also to a consumer durable customer, also to a personal credit customer, also to a credit card customer, also to micro-enterprises, also to business loans. We are spanning a wide range, also for affordable housing. So we're doing a spanning a wide range, and blend at 1.5 is really a good number. We are frankly very happy about it. We're just waiting to, we just wish we could fast forward time and be able to report one-year forward numbers to you. And I'm just waiting for such a day when we'll be able to share our numbers with you a year from now. So we are that much tails up internally. Now, coming back to the last thing about two more things I want to share with you is the fee income. Now, our fee income is not only from the businesses like your loans, We have income coming from loans, of course, where we get dispersal income and prepayment income and all that kind of stuff. But also we also get income from on the liability side, from insurance distribution, mutual funds give some annuity income. On the wholesale side, we make income in the form of LCBG, etc. Wealth management is growing pretty well for us. The cash management business is firing very well. We've got a really fantastic cash management product. The span of business that giving us income is a very it's pretty good for us. Now, for us, retail fees constitute 84% of the total fee income. So if it's retail giving us 84%, we know it's sustainable and can pull through next few quarters, can only grow from here. Now, I got only two more points to add to you. One is that as a business model, since we're building it ground up and we don't have a legacy, so to say, in a business model to worry about in terms of what we are incrementally building on retail side. So every product of a bank is very much a customer-first product. You know, for example, if it's credit cards, you tend to think of it like, there are lots and lots of fees and charges and some sort of opacity oftentimes. Everything about our bank is transparent in the way we design the product. Similarly, on the loans and all that, on the deposits and all that. So that's one thing. And then my second penultimate point is about the operating profits, and this is very important. Now, in terms of the operating profit, let me read some numbers off to you. Yes. Now, you should note the following numbers. In FY19, December 2018 is when we merged. So we have taken December quarter operating profit, December and the March quarter, then we have taken them together and then we have annualized it so that the full benefit of Capital First and IDFC Bank is coming in it. So that number, and then after annualizing it, we find the operating profit of the bank post-merger, so that there's a like-to-like comparison, is 1105 crore. In FY20, this number shot up 60% to 1,764 crore. In FY21, this number grew by 8% to 1,909 crore. This is a COVID year where obviously income was troubled. Then in FY22, this operating profit has jumped from 1,909 crore to 2,753 crore. That's a growth of 44%. So you can clearly see that there is a 3-year CAGR of 36%, including a COVID year. And therefore, our big, happiness is coming from the fact that the operating, all of you might point out that our operating expenses of the bank are quite high, which frankly I agree. But I'm saying net of that expenses in the bank, our operating profit has jumped by 44% in last year, from 1909 crore to 2752 crore. Now, that alone even doesn't tell the full story. Now you compare this quarter by quarter. If you take quarter by quarter, again, the Q3 FY19, the quarter in which we merged, our operating profit excluding trading income, which is like a core, was 276 crore. Now, this quarter, this number, the Q4 FY22, this number has touched 836 crore. Now, just think, 276 going to 836 crore, despite whatever expenses we may have. So we are feeling really very good about our incremental economics of this bank. And I am a firm believer that if incremental economics are so strong, all we have to do is just sit and deliver Rahul Dravid style, not play any false shots, no cross pattern, nothing. And then this will jump from here. And then straight away, if you adjust for a reasonable credit loss, you will get to see strong return of equity. So we feel broadly that a bank is headed for a fantastic return on equity, and that game will play out. Many of you have had concerns over the last 2-3 years because you felt that you're always coming and saying this legacy or that legacy. That really was never the intent, but unfortunately it turned out like that. I can safely say that 3-year period is behind us. We've fixed everything. Now we're just looking forward to growing the bank, and hopefully if you're staying put with us, you will get to see the results from our side. So thank you very much. That's my quick talk on an overview level. Maybe my friend Sudhanshu can give you a quick commentary on the specific this quarter's numbers.
Thanks, Rajya. I would like to start with an update on the growth of asset side of the business. As Rajya said, we have witnessed strong business momentum continuing into Q4 FY22. The overall funded assets of the bank grew by 13% during the year to reach ₹1,31,951 crore as on March 31, 2022. This was mainly driven by the growth in retail loans and commercial finance loans, which grew by 28% and 15% respectively on a YOY basis. Disbursals were strong, and in the retail segment, these were higher by 32% in Q4 22 as compared to Q4 FY21. Within the retail segment, the home loan segment registered the fastest growth, and that book grew by 52% on a YOY basis. The bank has seen strong traction on the prime home loan segment since the launch of its attractive interest rates for prime home loan customers. The rural finance book within retail, which includes funding to self-help groups, Kisan credit cards, micro housing loans, and some small enterprise loans, that book grew by 12% on a YOY basis. The bank has maintained its conservative stance towards commercial loans, which includes business loans, commercial vehicles loans, with strict underwriting norms, and that book grew at 15% on a YOY basis. On the wholesale side, the bank continued to bring down its infrastructure book as per the stated strategy, and it reduced by 36% on a YOY basis and 14% sequentially. The non-infra corporate book remained steady with a growth of 5% on a YOY basis and 9% sequentially. The top 10 borrowers' concentration has steadily come down and reduced to 3.7% as of March 31, 2022, as compared to 5.9% in March 31, 2021 and 19% in March 31, 2018 before the merger. The bank plans to grow corporate book going forward based on the right opportunities, pricing and the assessment of risk. Infrastructure book is now just 5.2% of the overall funded assets. We are happy to report that guarantees which were given by the bank for Spectrum has now been released. The bank has more than 7 lakh issued credit cards so far, mostly to existing customers of the book. Our spends per active card are higher by 35% as compared to the industry average. On the liability side, the bank's CASA deposits have grown by 11% on a YOY basis to reach ₹51,170 crores, and the CASA ratio as on March stood at 48.44%. However, a point to note is that average CASA for FY22 stood at 49.88% as compared to 41.50% in FY21. Overall, customer deposits increased by 13% on a YOY basis to reach ₹93,214 crores. The proportion of current account in the overall CASA mix improved to 18.29% at March 22 as compared to 11.8% in March last year. The bank has managed to bring down the excess liquidity during this quarter as the LCR was at 136% as compared to 149% last quarter. As the business and economic environment revised going forward, there would be scope of further improving on this metric. This quarter, bank added 42 branches to take the branch count to 641 branches. 70% of the new branches were opened in semi-urban and rural areas. The bank has substantially granularized the liability base since merger, and CASA and TD less than 5 crores stood at 85%. In terms of asset quality, Mr. Vaidyanathan has covered that we have seen a substantial progress. Our provision coverage ratio, including technical write-offs, has increased to 70% at March 31, 2022. And if we exclude one Mumbai toll account, which became NPA in Q1, the provision coverage ratio stood at 77%. Of course, we have seen a sharper improvement in the retail segment. On the P&L front, very quickly, the bank has seen strong growth in profitability. NII for Q2 increased by 36% on a YOY basis, and by 32% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. The net interest margin improved to 6.27% for Q4 FY22 from 5.17% in Q4 FY21, driven largely by decrease in cost of funds, and however, asset yields stayed broadly stable. So for the full year, the net interest margin stood at 5.96% as compared to 5.03% in FY21. On the fee front, again, there was a healthy increase of 40% on a YOY basis. The fee was 841 crores as compared to 600 crores in Q4 FY21. For the full year, the fee increase was 66%, and the fee for the full year was rupees 2691 crores. Fee income growth was largely contributed by increase in fees related to loan sourcing, higher transaction fees, and wealth management fees, as Vaidya mentioned. The fee growth was 13% on a sequential basis, which also indicates a strong performance on this front. Core operating income increased by 37% YOY to rupees 3510 crores in Q4 FY22 from rupees 2561 crores in Q4 FY21. The core operating income of the bank for the full year grew by 38% as compared to FY21. Operating expenses grew by 24% at rupees 2674 crores for Q4 FY22 as compared to rupees 2156 crores for Q4 FY21 on account of increased business activities and lower base due to subdued economic activity due to COVID last year. As a result, the core operating profit of the bank for Q4 increased by 106% to rupees 836 crores from rupees 405 crores in Q4 FY21. Provisions were lowered by 36% on a YOY basis, and as Vaidya mentioned, the credit cost for the quarter has come at 120 basis points, and this has come down on a quarter-on-quarter basis. The bank has not utilized any portion of COVID provision in this quarter and carries forward COVID provision of rupees 165 crores as on March 31, 2022. As a result of all the numbers which I talked about, the profit after tax increased by 168% to rupees 343 crores in Q4 FY22 from rupees 128 crores in Q4 FY21. Sequentially, it went up by 22%. PAT for the full year was at 145 crores. We had posted a negative PAT of rupees 630 crores loss in Q1 due to higher provisions of rupees 1872 crores to tackle unprecedented COVID-19 second wave impact. Thereafter, the profitability has improved gradually to rupees 152 crores in Q2, to rupees 281 crores in Q3, and now 343 crores in Q4. 22, driven by gradual improvement in the core operating profit and sustained credit cost levels. The bank has maintained strong capital adequacy and its CAR was at 6.74% as of March 31, 22, with CET1 ratio of 14.88%. The overall CAR has improved by close to 298 basis points vis-à-vis the last year. The bank also mobilized Tier 2 of rupees 1500 crores during the quarter in its maiden round for marquee investors, including LIC, which came with 60% participation. The bank is comfortably placed in terms of capital as compared to the mandated levels and look forward to growth going forward. With that, we can hand it over for Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Anish Munka from Asterix Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for this opportunity. So I had this amazing experience with a pre-approved credit card from IDC First Bank. So it was actually on my app to use seconds after I agreed to the document you sent. So the tech stack supporting such functions shouldn't have been as simple to develop. as has been the experience, and would definitely entail a good amount of operating leverage as the volumes increase. Other than this, we have also observed increased tech hiring and marketing regarding the same from IDFC side on platforms like LinkedIn and YouTube. So what's the bigger picture, Vaidyanathan sir, and how should an investor expect this to transform IDFC First Bank's way of doing business 3-4 years down the line? Thank you.
Thank you for that, for the experience you shared. It makes our team feel better. Thanks for that. Now, yes, we have spent the money building all these good stacks and giving our customers really good experience. And the benefit we see is actually lower cost, on an incremental basis. So, for example, in the credit card business, I don't know, you'd be surprised to know we have no DSAs. And the entire, as you know, the industry for the last 20, 30 years has been built about asking DSAs to originate credit cards for you. And we have 7 lakh cards, no DSA. So this ability comes to us because we developed good processes. And then we, of course, reach out to these marketing channels and we originate loans. So we believe it will pay back, in terms of operating leverage in the years to come. That's one of the reasons why we are very bullish about ourselves, which you can't see today because you're seeing the numbers today and probably happy or unhappy about some of the numbers. But we internally feel happy because we know that you fast forward the story 1 year forward or 2 year forward, straight away the income will rise. Rather a bit disproportionately.
Makes sense. So, sir, what is the top and mid-level management attrition rate for FY22 and how do they fare compared to the industry? How does the company continue to keep the credit underwriting culture intact if you are growing at 25% plus rate continuously as so many new people enter the business? Thank you.
These are both great questions. Somehow attrition, we've not put any public numbers. But I can tell you briefly that our attrition at senior management, let me say at top 2-3 levels of management, is very, very low. I mean, we rarely come across, and we all come across a case only once in an odd while. It's quite low, very stable. Now, attrition is more in the bottom of the pyramid, really, when people join for the first jobs, work for 2-3 years, find a higher compensation somewhere, go away, or move for personal reasons or whatever. So attrition is typically more on the lower end of the hierarchy chain. Now, with regard to credit, that's an easy one to answer because we think that our credit will hold up with scale, and that's something that we feel very very confident of. That's because the whole credit architecture of this bank we have built ground up. So we know every bit and every moving part of this place, we meaning not I mean the whole team. We understand what we built, we understand the stack, we understand the credit criteria, we know how each of these evolved, we knew what we built in 2011 and 12 and 13 and 14 and 20 and 21, 22, every time the scorecard has evolved with the learning. So we've been through this process, basically the inside out of it. The second thing is that, with in due course, underwriting capabilities in this country has only improved because of more availability of data and ability to scrape data from multiple sources, etc. So what we do is actually not just believe in these numbers or these processes alone. We even track ourselves by certain outputs. So there are certain number of things we track. We track to monitor whether it's performing well. For example, we track off the loans we booked, what is the number of customers who return the checks next month itself. We call it first EMI, the check bounce, but check is only metaphor, normally, Nash. But we say that first EMI check bounce is X percentage of what it was. So I'll give you one number. For example, pre-COVID, if the index was 1 of check bounces, today, on the first EMI bounce basis, for the definition I said earlier, the check bounce is 0.7. So check bounces are 70%, only 70% of what it was pre-COVID. Then we track similarly bucket 1, bucket 2, bucket 3. We check SMA. Then we check vintage analysis. We check recovery. So we track many fronts like these. And frankly, we are very, very cautious about this because the last thing we want is to have a problem in credit loss. On our book, a few years from now, that won't smell right for us. So we're very conscious about it. We have the right tools, the right technology. So we feel confident.
Just the final question from my end. So as per our aspirations, we want to become a world-class bank. And our today's balance sheet is nearly at 1.9 lakh crore. And the plan is not to stop until the numbers become much, much larger. So what are the current biggest weaknesses that stop us from becoming one and the ones that you are focusing to resolve over the next 5-7 years?
See, the truth is that when we say world-class bank, and, you know, the thing is, it's not, size alone doesn't make anybody a world-class bank, and maybe there are some amazing institutions that are also large and also world-class, but that's also true. But in our case, you know, our loan book is only 1,20,000 crore. So for us, even if you grow at 20-25%, you know, at 25%, you can double your balance sheet in three and a half years. You double it again in 3.5 years. So for us, it's not difficult for you to imagine that this 1.2 lakh crore bank will become, say, 2.4 crore loan book maybe 3-4 years from now, another maybe 3-4 years from then, maybe 5 lakh crore book, and from there, hopefully another 10 lakh crore book. This story will never stop at all. Just not stop, because the lending is running by a machine here. It's running by a set of formula and a bit of credit underwriting processes, and there is unserved credit in the country. So you see, you know, large, amazing banks like ICICI Bank, you know, 20 years ago, they were just a 200 crore loan book. So who would have imagined they'll become a 6 lakh crore retail book today? It just compounds. That's it, over a period of time. Look at HDFC Bank, look at Kotak Bank, look at the other banks. They're all great banks. So for us to keep compounding from here, the loan book, and play a steady, straight game for next 15, 20 years, really, I don't see a problem.
Thank you so much, Vaidyanathan, sir. The answers were very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Lalit Dev from Equiris. Please go ahead.
To understand on the margins trajectory, so in this quarter it was like about 6.27%. So was there any one-off in the quarter? Because it, as we see, like, that core NIMs have improved by about 28 basis points on a sequential basis.
Yeah, Lalit, there were no one-offs as such during the quarter. So this is a steady increase which has happened on a quarter-on-quarter basis.
Okay. Thank you. And so another data question, can you sir, tell us the gross slippages and net slippages for the during the quarter?
Yeah, gross slippages for the quarter was about 1400 crores and net slippages were about 700 crores. We saw strong recoveries during the quarter.
And there was one, you know, corporate account of about 250 crores that slipped during this quarter. It was a legacy corporate account. But if you net that out, the numbers are quite comfortable.
Sure, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ishan Agarwal from Irvana Capital LLP. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity.
So,
first of all, congratulations on a superb performance on all fronts. The team has again surpassed my expectations in terms of the execution.
Thank you.
So, first question is that given the levers that we have for increase in NIMs from here on, even at 6.27%, if I have to name a few, we are booking retail loans at 14.5 to 15%. We are replacing 26,000 crores of high-cost deposits over the next 3 years. Our LCR drag is there right now on our balance sheet, and our incremental cost of funds is 5%. Then why are we saying that NIMs should taper off from here on? Won't these levers push the NIMs to a higher trajectory of, say, 6.6 to 6.8%?
Yes, it could still rise from here.
It could still rise from here. And what will be your guidance on the OPEX front for FY23? Will it be in line with your overall loan growth, or will it be lower?
Lower, because that's where the operating leverage comes in. If you remember the first speaker gentleman spoke, I think it was Anish, if I'm not mistaken, he talked about that experience. So basically,
if the loan book grows by, say, 22-23%, OPEX should grow at a lower pace is what we are expecting.
Think about it as what the NII plus income, fee income will grow at.
Okay.
And think of the OPEX should grow lower. But more than the percentages, what is important is the fact that remember the NII, give me the standard. The NII plus fee income, they tend to grow on a larger base.
Right.
So a larger base growing at a greater percentage
vis-a-vis OpEx growing slower but on a slower base, that is what actually expands the P&L so sharply.
Okay. My last question.
Give you a number. I just got your number here, so I'll explain. So let us look at the income line for the bank for financial year FY22. So our NII plus fee income without trading gains, okay, straightforward, only income, core income, that was 12,397 crore. So and obviously OPEX is much lower. So this thing that is, if and last year this income has grown by 38%.
Right.
If you take the quarter on quarter, this number has grown by 37%. That is Q4 FY22 divided by Q4 FY21. That's 37%. But the income, the OPEX line has grown by only 24% on a lower base. And that is suddenly the operating leverage. Suddenly, otherwise you might wonder how did the income, the core, what we call the core operating profit, how did it jump from 400 something crores to 800 crores? This is the reason. And this is what makes us feel good about next year also. Hopefully when we'll talk, say 1 year from now, you will see that the income would have grown further and OPEX would have grown at a lower pace.
Okay, great. So my final question is, we've achieved two of our primary three goals that we had set at the time of the merger in terms of the liabilities issue being sorted, the asset quality issue being sorted. On profitability, when do you see the bank reporting double-digit ROE?
Soon.
How soon?
So soon meaning definitely I think by our own internal estimates are that by fourth quarter of next year we should be getting there.
Fourth quarter of FY23.
Yes, and then you know the trajectory. Remember we're coming from zero.
Right.
So we already touched the 6 and next year if we can touch 10, then you can imagine what the next year exit quarter will look like, and then we are like any other good bank, you know, in the mid-teens. And then actually our own belief is that we will not be mid-teens banks, we'll be a little higher than mid-teens banks when this story stabilizes.
Do we have any capital raise plans for FY23, given we already are envisaging a 20-25% loan growth? Tier 1 capital I'm talking about.
No.
Okay. Thank you. That is helpful.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohan Mandora from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I just want to understand, can you help us understand in terms of the OPEX expenses between, say, fixed OPEX, business linked variable and future capacity building? What is the split, and in the last 2 years, how have each of these line items grown?
Well, we don't have any of those numbers ready for you, unfortunately. Maybe we'll try next time. But let me just say that we definitely, portion of our expenses are towards building the future. You know, there are two types of expenses we are having. One is, of course, run the bank as usual. Second is remediation of any of the existing systems. For example, if the tech stack and many of the parts of the tech stack requires remediation because some part may not be right, maybe the core systems, maybe the enterprise service bus, maybe the channel-facing tech systems, maybe the CRM. So some of these things often require, or maybe some systems doesn't talk to each other or reconcile with each other. So those kind of things, remediation work is always there. The third sort of expense is, of course, investing for the future, which is basically building a really future-ready tech stack, and we are very focused on that to build those kind of capabilities where customers can get, instant solutions. For example, we have launched a mobile app, but we're going to launch an upgraded version of mobile app where customers should be able to purchase mutual funds, etc., you know, on the fly. On the fly meaning not just buying a mutual fund, actually we've done API connect with all the mutual fund companies, and therefore through an integrator whereby customers can come there, customers can do a query of the highest performing mutual funds, either the Morningstar or something, and then they can book click the fund they want to buy, then they can see the categories of companies, categories of investments underneath. They can see the companies underneath those in mutual funds. They can click and buy what they want to buy. So these kind of capabilities we are building in the bank. And I think all of these will add value to the bank in the longer run. You may not be able to see it in the P&L this quarter or next quarter, but we are building a bank for the long run, so they will all add up.
Right, sir. So, sir, any ballpark range where we are operating in terms of these expenses towards future technology addition?
No, we don't have specific numbers on this one.
Okay. And, sir, what was the total OPEX towards, say, the DSA distributor payouts in FY22?
I don't have the number offhand.
We don't share that those specific numbers.
Sure, sir. And the employee count as of March 22? And where do we see employee per branch trending in, say, next 3 years?
No,
this has come down from 50 or to 40 from, say, 19 to 21. And where do we see that trajectory in the next 3 years?
We think that for most of our regular businesses, like, you know, home loans, car loans, personal credit, etc., we don't need people anymore. I mean, in the sense, we don't need to expand the team at all. And the very much the existing team that we built should be able to just have a higher disbursal of about 25% straightforward just because of the way the economy lifts and the way people become more productive over time. But for maybe new businesses that we launch, so our hiring, if any, will only be for that. There's nothing we need for existing businesses.
Sure, sir. And just employee count as March 22.
And that's one of the reasons you will see operating leverage. You know, supposing we have X number of employees doing all the loan businesses, and the same teams. So supposing a loan book is, just make it up, say 90,000 crores. How much is the loan book right now, retail?
93,000
crores. And you make it up. Suppose the 93 goes to say 120,000 crores or something, and out of that we add no people. You get the drift. You straight away see what it will do to profitability. That's how operating leverage plays out. So we will need people only for newer bank branches report where we need to hire people, maybe add some in wealth management, maybe add something in gold loans, maybe add something in some businesses where we have to be in priority sector. Like, so those kind of things we add people, but not really for regular businesses.
Sure, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhavin Gala from Marine Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Bhavin.
Hi. Thank you, sir, for the opportunity, and I really congratulate the entire team of IDFC Bank for doing the heavy lifting and pulling the bank across last many years. I have few pointed questions. First is on the retail banking operations. The recent earnings do suggest that the retail banking operations have turned around. They have posted a PAT of 400 crore plus. So what explains this turnaround? Was there a one-off or the entire contribution of has come from recurring activities in terms of from the revenue stream? The second question is, though in the PPT you have mentioned entire spectrum related BGs have been repaid. So if you could help us in terms of specific numbers on the exposure of Vodafone idea. Yeah, that's from my side, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, so on the retail front, definitely there has been a turnaround. We have seen lower provisions during the quarter, and hence what you see in external segment that for retail banking, there is a profit of 430 crores. So there is no one-off as such. This has come to lower provisions and robust growth in the retail asset book. Telecom. And on the telecom front, about 2,100 crores of guarantees were released. This was towards guarantees given to Vodafone and Bharti. And on Vodafone, now we have an outstanding of about 500 crores. This exposure used to be about 3,200 crores at one point of time.
Thank you. And one last question. So if I heard correctly during the call, the blended growth for the asset book for FY13 is in the vicinity of 20 to 25%, right? We are not referring only to the retail book. The 25% of loan asset book is on the blended book.
That's right. That's right.
Correct. Thank you very much, and all the best for the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sahil Sharma from SS Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congratulations for a great set of results. My first question is to understand our CASA strategy. if you look at the CASA book, its growth has been slightly lower than our loan book growth in Q4 and also FY22. The liability franchise is the backbone of any modern retail bank. So what I'm wondering is, what is our strategy on the CASA side and whether it is possible for us to improve our CASA ratio even from here beyond 50%. Related to that, I think what was mentioned is that current accounts are 50.
Hold on, let's take one question at a time to make our life easier. So the CASA is easy one to handle actually. See, last year we were running LCR of 150%. So that's a lot of money excess, you know, lying either with RBI or in repo or somewhere, so or reverse repo, so we're not getting enough returns. So this year onwards, we want to grow the loan book. We will press the accelerator on deposits, we will get it. We really don't see any concern. You know, I mentioned in my opening remark how we raised about 25,000 crore even in a COVID year. I'm telling you, maybe you are, there are concerns about our bank that you might have had about our profits and all in the past. But I hope you'll agree with me that our bank really is a respected brand. We get deposits, huge deposits from retail, not the bulk deposits kind. And when we just want to press the pedal on the liabilities, it just comes pouring in.
I see. So can we expect it to grow roughly at the rate of the loan book so that the CASA ratio is maintained roughly?
Yes. We'll grow it a little bit faster. We think that 50 is no problem for us to maintain.
Okay. So related to that, my question was, I think our current accounts are around 15 to 18% of CASA right now. And I wanted to understand what kind of initiatives we are taking to grow the current accounts book and whether there is an opportunity to cross-sell our current accounts to our MSME retail borrowers.
Great question. It's a good observation also that our current account is as a proportion of CASA, so to say, is not good enough. And we need to improve on that. For us, savings account, pressing the button on savings account is the easy one. We just pressed it and we got it. But we will start working on current accounts a little more because that requires, as you know, we built this even in a previous organization, that it takes time to build it because you need to build good technology, good ecosystem, capture the flow of money from end to end, from business to business. And then add multiple solutions to customers which are not just banking related, you know. It could be accounting solutions and HR solutions, legal solutions. You've got to build all those capabilities. So we're building this up right now and we are quite confident that we will make a mark in that space also.
The proportion of CAR in the overall CAR has improved from 11% to 18%. And our endeavor would be to take it to 30% in due course, like other good banks.
Okay. Thank you, sir. So last question from my side. We had launched an amazing credit card product, and the rate of interest here is sort of dependent on the customer credit profile. And I think the idea here was that it might encourage some of our customer base to revolve credit, the ones that are comfortable revolving credit. So have you seen that actually pick up? And like, can you share any kind of data on what percentage of our credit card customer base is actually revolving their credit and how this compares to industry?
This is for, by the way, there's a lot of disturbance on your line. If you don't mind, just go on mute mode. It'll help others. As far as credit card is concerned, you know, we are in the first, if you don't mind, just go on mute mode. No, I think it's disturbing, you know, just.
Yes, I've muted the lines.
Yeah, hurting the ear. So back to you. So on the credit card front, typically the business takes time to start getting about a 50% of the loan of the book to start having interest income. So typically you can think of it like about 25% of the book could be revolver, about 25% of the outstandings could be installment based, you know, where the customer is not revolving, but customer is choosing to convert the transaction to an installment. So, and balance 50% of straightforward transactors, they just pay up on time. So we would say we are a little behind the industry at this point of time because we are still a newer player, just, you know, 1 year into the business. But as this plays out for the next 1 or 2 years, we will definitely get better. But our good thing about our bank is that our customer complaints are really very low. Customers, you know, by the way, we are a new bank. It's not that people knew our credit cards compared to other banks who have 15, 20 million cards each, or maybe 15 million, and we just have maybe 600,000-700,000 today. So despite being a new player, the spends on our cards is really good. And delinquency is very low on this business for us. So all this is coming because right in the beginning when we launched the card, we didn't try to game the customer, figuring out, you know, if you price it like this, I'll make more money, less money. We straightforward made a really good product for the customer. We didn't say that if you spend so much, I'll waive your fees. If you do that, we straight away said it free for life or, you know, no annual fee. We straight away paid good reward points. We straight away said that reward point can be redeemed for the next purchase, something that really nobody does, you know, in our knowledge. Everybody wants to give some catalog against it. So, though we are planning to introduce a fee structure for redemption of the reward point, but I guess it will be nominal and customers have already been notified. So basically, we have put a really simple product and a really customer-friendly product. So I think it'll pay back in due course, maybe a little slow, but it'll pay back very well and pay back in a sustainable manner to us.
Thank you. We'll move to the next question from the line of Ashutosh K. Mishra from Ashika Stock Broking. Please go ahead. Ashutosh Mishra, your line has been unmuted.
Hello?
Yes, please proceed.
So my question is to understand the long-term evolution of the NIMs, especially from a 3 years perspective. You know, keeping in mind where do you see your composition of retail and commercial finance books going ahead from here. We have launched prime home loans also. So how you see the NIMs, you know, getting between, you know, the advantage which we have on the paying off the high cost borrowings and the change in the retail and commercial loan book going forward from here.
So Sudhanshu, I'll take this. See, the thing is that, you know, when we started the whole, you know, post-merger, we put out a number that retail will be X percentage of the book, you know, 70% and all that. Now, you know, we're past that stage, so we don't want to put any more guidances on what percentage it will be. We ideally would like no business to have more than 15% of our total book. So we have just so many businesses. We have credit cards, we've got personal loans, we've got, you know, commercial vehicle, car loans, home loans, loan against property, we've got rural financing, and, you know, we've got wholesale credit. So the way now we're thinking is not in terms of 70, 30, 80, 20. We don't have any of those benchmarks now. We are beyond that stage. Now we are focusing on saying that we launch so many businesses, everything stays below 15, except for mortgages and loan against property, where we'd like them to be, where we'd like the cap to be about 20% each. And in the corporate side, we don't have a lower limit, but we don't. We think that about a upper cap would probably be 30%. So we are more guided by upper caps, not the lower caps anymore.
Okay, so we
have to... What I meant is that you could, we don't peg a number that wholesale will be 30 or 20 or 10, nothing like that. Whatever gives us good returns, whatever gives very diversified, whatever where we have very, where our credit underwriting standards are well proven and we feel confident to grow, whatever is very diversified, whatever meet and wherever we have our own strengths. So whatever grows, as long as it doesn't bust a particular limit, we like to grow it, that's it.
But, so we can expect the NIM to remain above 6% or 5.5 if I ask you from the 2.5 years down the line, roughly.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. My second question is on a, again, same way on a fee income front. So 80% of our, the core fee income comes from the retail front. So do you see the growth to remain in line with the growth of our retail loan book, or do you see some changes or some, because we are hearing a lot of, technological product may impact the retail fee income growth of the bank in general. So your view on that, sir?
Yeah, I'll take that. If you see our fee income to total income is about 22% as a ratio, again, we feel that we have a lot of opportunity to increase in there. Of course, some part of the fees comes through lending, right? But there is a huge opportunity to earn fees through non-capital consumption-linked revenue sources like your trade, like your toll, like your credit card and so on, and also selling third-party products. Right? So we feel that we will be able to register strong growth going forward as well. And there is a huge opportunity to increase.
Okay, and on OPEX front, does bank have any internal cost to CI ratio target, and how do you see that panning out over the next 3 years?
See, very clearly, you know, we should not take a startup bank first two, 3 years cost and try and think that this is going to be the eventual cost structure of this bank. It won't be. We are finding that that cost to income will begin to come down with simply by scale and operating leverage. And of course, I'll give you a color on the incremental. One of the things we track internally, which is not a number we release to the market and things like that, one of the things we track internally is incremental cost to income ratio. So how this incremental cost to income ratio works is that the year goes by, we know the bank has generated a certain amount of income and the bank incurred a certain amount of OPEX this year. So that becomes incremental, and that number for us is trending down pretty quickly and will trend down next year also. And finally, incremental cost to income becomes the cost income eventually on a scaled up book. So to give you an idea, this year, in this quarter, in Q4 FY22, so let me take you back Q2 FY22. So at that time, our OPEX growth was 47%, but income growth was 41%. So obviously, it's not a great cost income ratio. You come to Q3 FY22. So our expense growth was 30% and income growth was 34%. Now you come to Q4 FY22. Our income growth is, our expense growth is 24%, but income growth is 37%. Yeah. So you see how the jaw is opening. So it should not surprise you at all if you wake up next year, year after that, to see the incremental cost to income coming down for the bank. It will come down.
Okay.
I'll tell you another very big factor which many people are missing when they're evaluating a bank. So you think of today's cost income as X percentage, let me say 78% or something like that, if you take the latest quarter, 76%. When we say 76, actually not, you know, we strip out all kind of treasury income and everything. We just mean core, which we can measure quarter on quarter. So that's somewhere there. Now you think that there are three businesses that is dragging this down. You know those three because you call them out. One is credit cards. In the credit card business, our expense is more than our income by close to about 320 crores.
Yes.
Okay. So that's been basically the loss of the year. Now, that plus a bit of credit cost. So obviously, we're not going to be incurring 324 crores of, you know, gap between operating income forever. It's just the stage of building it. So let's say that make it up that next year it comes down to 100 crores. In the year after that, you know, it breaks even, and frankly, it will become positive in our opinion. So that's one item. Just keep it there. Number two, on the retail liability side. So we've told you that it's incurring a loss of about 325 crores a quarter for us. You multiply that by four, you know, about 1250, 1300 crores we're losing in that business because these are branches, ATMs, everything we set up to build a CASA.
Yes.
So, tap the number there. Now the legacy item of that, that what we talked about, 27,000 crores at 8.8% we are monitoring. So you add these three numbers. Now, simply add back, because you know we're going to fix this for sure. Certainly, we're not going to run the bank like this forever. So you just add back those three items back to our income line, which is where it will head for sure. And then you will see our cost income has already come down to 64. Already, even today. Just add back these three numbers. So, which means that if you did nothing, just fix these three items, and don't do any more operating leverage, will be 64. Then on top of it, add operating leverage. So it will come down to 50s. So I can clearly see that this bank is getting to a 50% cost income ratio. It's only a matter of time. You're there, I'm there. You can see the numbers as they play out.
Sure. The last question I like to on credit card. The RBI has come out with the new regulations on that. What's your view and how do you see our bank is doing in this? Because your product is really good. In the last con call, you have asked one of the analysts to pick this, and I have taken that and I really find very good product. So what's your view on RBI regulation first, and how do you see the bank's long-term strategy on the credit card?
We like it. We are very proud about the product we launched. I'm also happy, like the first gentleman who spoke, that you also had a good experience. Thank you for sharing. So with a good product, we think this book will now begin to continue to grow for us. I told you credit quality is excellent. Customers are happy. We hardly have complaints. So basically, we think we will keep growing this. There is a lot of profit to be made in this business. Right now, in this all this conversation of cost to income and adjusting ROE, etc., I'm merely talking about matching expense to income. Eventually, this is not going to be a matching thing. This is going to make, in our opinion, maybe 3-4 years from now, our internal estimates are we'll make a PAT of not less than 500 to 600 crores on credit card alone.
Okay.
So that's the kind of picture we are seeing on this business. And with regard to your second question, frankly, the norms are good norms. Basically, inactive cards will get weeded out. And anyway, we're a new bank, so we don't have much to lose on the existing base. We don't have co-brands yet, so even the co-brand issue doesn't apply to us.
Okay, got that.
Thank
you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jai Mundra from B&K Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir, good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, a question is on your SAR mobilization. I just wanted to get some more quantitative aspects here. So clearly, the SAR mobilization SAR story has been phenomenal in the last 3 years without putting too much branches as well. If you can help us to understand the granularity of this SAR portfolio, clearly your LCR disclosure shows as per the last quarter that it is fairly granular in terms of if I do the retail regulatory retail breakup, is probably in line with some of the larger peers. But I just wanted to understand if you can further break that into ticket size, whichever you feel appropriate, maybe 2 lakhs, 5 lakhs, or maybe even 10 lakhs, as to how much is, between certain ticket sizes. And if you also have the breakup for individual, wholesale, government, trust, etc.
See, the way we think about it, that yes, I think on the savings account front, I think yes, bank has done a good job. Actually, quite a good job. But I think on the current account front, we've done a okay job, I think, because our current account business should grow faster. In fact, it should outstrip the growth of savings account for us to get a decent balance mix of CA and the SA. So we'll work on that, and India is open, opportunities are open. We have a really good bank and really good products, really, really good products. So we will definitely address that issue as it goes along. With regard to the balance per account, I'm just, as you speak, maybe you can ask the next question and I'll fetch the answer by that time. Per account, how much balance you get, etc. I don't have the number offhand.
Sure.
As we speak, we got the answer. So, yeah.
Sure. So, I don't want the average number. I actually wanted if you have the breakup, maybe by ticket sizes, maybe by HNI or maybe by ultra HNI or maybe by salaried retail or maybe a normal, 50.
I'll tell you, as a bank, generally speaking, we are, if you're trying to get a sense of segment, we are attracting a slightly upper middle class income segment kind of or HNI kind of segment, which is naturally kind of gravitating to us. That's because of the kind of branches we put up. I don't know if you've been to any of our branches. They are really high quality branches, spacious, and very, very, so they're really good branches. Employees are really attractive. So our branches are like that. Our products are also such that there is a match. Our brand is also such that people tend to believe that we have good products, and
and so on. And our wealth management offering is really good. The last time I told someone to take a credit card, now I'm going to request to take a wealth management business. Just try our operation. You'll understand what a really super platform we built. So our wealth management business is very good. And our interest rate is such that it tends to attract HNI customers more. So let me just say that we get an upper income customer base to our bank. Largely, we also get the people who open 10,000 accounts, but we get more the upper end.
Right. And similarly, sir, if I were to see how much of your asset side customer, what would be the proportion of savings account which is coming from your existing asset side customer, or is it that the asset or the SA acquisition strategy is slightly different from asset side of customers?
Yeah, it is basically our, on the asset side, we have two kinds of customers. One is the consumer durable and two-wheeler kind of, they represent certain income profile. That income profile doesn't leave much balances actually. If at all they take, they probably take the 10K product of the bank. But there's not much of a penetration we have in that segment. So we'd love to. I mean, we like every segment, and we haven't made much of a penetration there. But our segments are more, like I said, people who are having a home loan from us, or people who have a business loan from us, who then also tend to have a bank account with us. Like I said, we are a little slightly upper middle class kind of income segment.
But any numbers, sir, that you want to put to get how much of your SA would be funded?
We'll come better prepared next time. On this question, I don't have it right now.
Sure, no worries, sir. And on your number of employees, sir, if you can give that number, and maybe because you have clearly higher yields, and you are you are arguably sort of dealing with on the asset side slightly, let's say, self-employed SME sort of customers. If you can also help us, what could be the number of employees which are engaged in recovery / collection / monitoring, and is that proportion slightly higher than other banks, or there is something else which is driving such a better let's say asset quality performance?
See, basically asset quality is from quality of underwriting and the skills developed in them. It's got some correlation to yield, but not really a lot. So, for example, so basically these days, even everything's getting digitized, even collection side is all getting, just like sales. So, not put out any specific division-wise numbers in the market, so I have no intention of sharing that. But I can just say that, I mean, I would not that I have it on my hand, but we don't share it anyway. We don't put out division-wise. That's not the data which is there in the investor presentation. But generally speaking, we are actually find that the number of employees inter se over a year is only coming down, though the book is going up. And that's because, more and more work is happening digitally. To give you one idea, for example, let me say even a year ago or 2 years ago, if X number of customers returned their checks unpaid and, a certain percentage, let me pick a number, say X percentage of that Y was going to visit the customer. Now, it's not X percent because now you're sending a UPI link to the customer paying to UPI. So nobody's going to the customer's home. So you get a sense about the entire activity of somebody going to the customer's home, picking up the check, etc., has come down. So that's why that's where all these, operating costs also comes down, and you get the drift.
Thank you.
So I would request you to please come back to you or email your questions. Thank you. Due to time constraint, we will take the last question from the line of Aditya Shah from Vikram Advisory Services. Please go ahead.
Congratulations, sir, on the wonderful set of numbers. And I've been looking at the improvement over the last 3-4 years, as you've mentioned. My question is, what should we expect as a steady state NIMS for the next 2 to 3 years?
I know many people ask this question actually, but we like to play it, along. There are some reasons why we feel it will go up, there are some reasons why we feel it will come down, and we've got to, take it as it comes. If you're doing more home loans, NIM should compress. We're also doing the other businesses that are going very well with good credit quality that should increase the NIM. So So we don't know where it will settle, but let me just say that it could inch up from here.
Right. So that is for this year, but overall on a 2-3 year basis, should we expect anywhere between 6% and 7%?
Yes, yes. That's our internal estimates also. Probably not. We're not touching. We're not pegging it at 7, but certainly should stay in the 6 plus 6 shifts plus league.
All right, sir. My next question is, why is there a sudden change in the savings bank interest rates in the last 1 year? First we were at 7, we came down to 6, then to 5, and then again to 6. Probably from 1st May we are doing it for balances above.
I'll tell you why we did that. It's a very simple answer. See, last year, you know, there was just too much of excess cash for us. I told you that in a COVID year of 2021, you know, I said this number to you earlier, we got 25,000-26,000 crores of cash, you know, pouring into the bank at that rate. Now, we couldn't take that because we were not doing a loan book. What do we do if another 25,000 crores lands up? So we had to reduce the rate at that point of time. And as you could see now, then we slowed down the growth of deposits and we were still very liquid. We're still sitting at 130% and 140%, even today for that matter. But then this year onwards, we are seeing strong growth. And that's why we have, you know, touched it, except that we're doing on a progressive basis this time. We're not paying from the first rupee. So that way it doesn't add to the cost also much. But yeah, of course, we're paying 6 and other banks are paying 3 or 4. This is going to be a higher cost for us. But really, like I said, it's more a measure of how much money we need. I've always told people that I am not going to take a position that we will never raise it, we will never drop it. I don't see any of those things. I'm playing cricket. I could go front foot. I could go back foot. I could do anything. Whatever the ball deserves, I will do.
No, but it's just that it's quite sudden. That is why in a year's time from moving 3% down, 2% down to moving 1% up. That is why this question, because it doesn't give stability in terms of the customers who are your savings bank customers, because the expectation changes pretty fast in 2-3 months or 6 months.
No, I appreciate the question and I appreciate the comment also. You're absolutely right. But thing is that, you know, for a whole year, we've kept it at 5%. And so it's not like it changed in 2-3 months. So for a whole year, we kept it there. And even now, as we speak, really like you know, we don't need money at 6%, really. But then we're preparing for the whole year. We are seeing a strong demand coming up. So we didn't want to be, we want to be just prepared, so to say.
All right, sir. And my last question is regarding the reverse merger with the IDFC Limited. Since their AMC has been sold, when do we expect any announcements on that front?
I'm not able to make any comment about that at this stage.
Okay. So should we say 6 months to 3 months or somewhere around that time, because probably things will get sorted by then?
No, I understand the question, but unable to comment because, you know, we did inform our interest to take the merger process forward, which we still maintain. So there's no doubt or there's absolutely no issue about intention from our side. But I think to put a time to it is difficult because you don't know, there are so many points to close before you get to that point. So, but there's no intention issue. Definitely intention is on, but things have to work out yet.
All right, sir. Thank you so much for your answer.
Thank you so much. But, you know, the earlier someone asked a question about return on equity and we half answered, I mean, we answered kind of. Now, you see this quarter's profit, you know, 340 crores, and then you multiply that by 4, and you know that, and then you annualize it, and then you divide by our equity. You know, we are already now looking, you know, pretty much better than what it was before. Not that we had a great benchmark in the past, it's pretty low, but at least it's becoming respectable now. But it's still lesser than respectable, I'd say. But then you add the, we are for three businesses, the ones that I named earlier, credit card, retail liabilities, and legacy liabilities. These three alone, if they were to just break even, forget being profitable, if they were just break even, we will add on a PAT basis, post-tax basis, 500 crores a quarter. So you add the 500 crores to the 340 crores, that takes us about 840 crores. And you annualize 840 crores into 4, that's 3,400 crores. And you divide 3,400 crores by 20,000 crores, you know, 21,000 crores. You get to see that you're already touching an ROE of 15% plus. So therefore, it should not surprise you at all when you touch a 15 ROE. Because all you have to do is just touch the 3 buttons and zeroize them from loss making. So, see, if any of you have any concerns about our return equity, I'm telling you, we are already there. Only we've got to work on those 3 items and rest it will increase. So don't at all be surprised when our ROE touches 15 and it'll definitely happen. And then you can imagine what a good governed, well-governed bank with a good ROE growing at 25%, technologically very able, what we should be valued at. And you can do the math for yourself. That's all my closing comment is, but anyway, I want to just say thank you to all of you who are on the call and for talking to us.
Thank you everyone for joining. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks Mr. Vedinathan, and thanks Sudhanshu for patiently answering all the questions, and all the best for the future. Thank you all the participants for participating on the call. Thank you and have a good weekend.
Thank you everyone. On behalf of ICICI Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.